Welcome to Exagility. I'm your host, John Coleman. John Hibbs from Coefficient, welcome to the Exagility podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm very well. Thank you, John. Nice to see you. Nice to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much. We seem to have some thought leaders that we both admire. You mentioned to me before the interview that you're a big fan of Alan Mulally.
I am indeed. He's been one of my, well, he is my all-time number one business hero. I was put onto the book American Icon, which I'm sure you've probably read as well, a number of years ago. Really enjoyed that. Wasn't expecting for this sort of like gangly, funny CEO to come in and save the day, who enjoyed hugging people more than anything else. But I just found him so inspiring, and of course looked up his work. He's written a couple of books as well. Working Together is one of them, and I, you know, just loved the process and what he spoke about. Working together, everyone's a leader at some point, loving each other up, being really supportive, except working as one team. Just found it really inspiring, and I know that you've worked with one of his good pals as well.
Yeah, Marshall Goldsmith. That's actually where I heard about Alan, to be honest. Marshall trained me in, I think, 2018 in Salt Lake City, and been a fan of Marshall for a while. But he tells a story in one of his books, not saying it verbatim now, but it's kind of paraphrasing here. But essentially, Alan Mulally was in Ford after the financial crisis, 2007-2008.
Ford were in a bit of a state. You know, they had loads of brands that they were servicing. I think they were set to lose something like $17 billion that year. And the great-great-grandson of Henry Ford thought, you know, we've got to do something, brought Alan Mulally in, and actually he sort of saved the day, didn't he? And he tells a nice story. Alan says, you know, Ford was set to lose $17 billion, and 4 months later, we did. And, you know, it's not like it wasn't an error or an accuracy thing. They were actually in a lot of trouble, but he completely turned that company around. He streamlined it. He made it a lot more simple. He made everyone feel like they had a really good part to play. In the automobile industry, it was standard practice, wasn't it, that you were very buttoned up, you were in silos, you never discussed your problems. If you made a mistake, you were out, and he completely changed that culture. So there's a great story about how they used to have business review meetings once a week with color-coded charts, and every single department would have to present their charts. And the first few weeks they did it, you know, all the charts would come in green, no problems at all, until one of the executives finally had the courage to present a red chart, and Alan Mulally stood up and clapped and, you know, gave him a pat on the back and said, you know, this is exactly what we're looking for. Because in business and in life, and, you know, if you can see your problems, if you know where they are, then you can deal with them. And as human beings, nobody is perfect. You know, we all make mistakes quite often. So I'm not saying embrace your mistakes, but I'm saying don't hide them away. And you made a mistake, hands up and let people help.
Indeed, it was a very good story. Really enjoyed it. He was basically encouraging people to ask for help rather than kind of hide that there were no problems when there were actually really more problems there.
Marshall tells a great story as well, which I'm sure you know, about how he's become such a great business coach. Because, I mean, he's like the greatest business coach ever, with clients that are phenomenal, and Alan Mulally being one of them. And he tells the story, and he laughs when he tells it. Of actually, you know, anyone would be a good business coach if you had my clients. And what he's very strict on is actually saying, well, look, I'll work with you, but you've got to do what I say when I say to do it, and you've got to listen to me and all this sort of stuff. And he says, look, if those rules, you don't want to play by those rules, that's absolutely fine, but you won't be a client of mine. And I love that story because it kind of hints at the ability or the efforts you should make to try to get good clients, clients that become ambassadors for you. Because anyone can have a successful business if they've got great clients. So it's seeking out those great clients.
Yeah. I remember actually I interviewed Marshall at the end of my event in Salt Lake City, and I asked him, I said, what if as a change agent, I'm not having a great time at the moment, you know, things are going on. And he said, suck it up, be a professional, it's showtime. He says, you know, if you're on a Broadway play and you're supposed to do some kind of dancing later on the stage or whatever, you say I have a sore toe and I'm sorry I can't dance tonight. Or my aunt died last week is one of the ones he said as well. You're a professional, it's showtime. He said Alan Mulally was a personified showtime. But that leads to a challenge as well, because I tried Marshall's advice for 3 years afterwards. But it didn't actually suit me because one of my values is authenticity. Mm-hmm. And so putting on a smile, hey, everything's great, showtime, when I'm suffering is not something that I work on. So I had a chat with another guy called Tim Wiggum in another episode about how do you set the mood. And I asked him, Tim, how do you manage this? I get the idea you want to set the climate and all that, but don't you need to kind of put on your own mask first kind of thing? And kind of said, yeah, that's exactly it, John. You need to kind of go do whatever you need to do, you know, eat properly, sleep properly, you know, go to the gym, be energized so you can be inspired yourself, so you can inspire others. But that's something that seems to be this area. Seems to be something that you're passionate about as well, John, about surrounding yourself with the right people. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sort of a serial entrepreneur and never really fitted in too well at school, and all my friends thought I was a bit odd. So, you know, getting myself a job in like the corporate world was tricky. So the only option left for me was to run my own businesses. So I've done that for 25 years or so. And it's interesting because if you can surround yourself with good people who share the same purpose and want to be on the same journey as you, it's amazing what you can achieve. And I think that the best way of actually doing that is to be genuine about who you are. Because if you can be honest and authentic, like you're saying, then people kind of walking by will go, oh, I like the sound of what John's talking about. I'll come and have a chat with him. Oh, yeah, you're into this. Okay, and you're going to do it that way. Well, that sounds like a journey I can come on. I heard a great quote the other day, which I can't quite get right, but it was something like this, that the brain associates and organizes information according to context. So if you can change the context in any given situation, you can change how people perceive it. So I live on Guernsey. I live on the west coast of Guernsey, and it's a beautiful place to live. And I like to go running. Well, I don't like to go running. I need to go running because I want to keep fit. But if I think to myself, oh, it's a bit windy today, and actually it's not that sunny, and oh, God, I've got to go running, and I'm going to be tired and sweaty, and I've got to take my glasses off and put my contact lenses in, and oh, I can't be bothered to do all that, I don't go. But if I think to myself, I am so lucky to be running on the coast along past beautiful beaches with the fresh air, and when I come back, I'm going to feel amazing because I've had some exercise. And there must be 5 billion people on the planet who would like to swap places with me. If I can put it in that context, it becomes very easy to go out and have a jog. There's lots of things that we've touched on already just in this first sort of few minutes, about looking after yourself, taking care of yourself, putting on your own oxygen mask first. I often think about flipping that, because if you surround yourself with great people, you don't necessarily have to put on your oxygen mask, because everyone else has got their oxygen masks on because you've helped them put theirs on, and they can help you put yours on. And it's this lovely balance. I've always been very clear that there's a very strong human connection with all walks of life. And if we can support others, that does ripple around and come back to us eventually. And it's the same with businesses. There's a massive crossover and a massive link to society and communities. Business is just a collective noun for a bunch of humans trying to solve a human problem for another bunch of humans that they call their customers. And all the humans in the business go home to their families every day, which is another collection of a small collection of humans. And those collections of families become communities, which is where we live, and is just another group of humans. And so there's a, you know, a massive, big, sort of very wobbly melting pot of humans interacting throughout business and life and community and education and government, and they're not separate silos.
Indeed. You just reminded me, John, about a book called Good to Great. I mean, if I ever write a book again, I must make sure I don't mention great companies, because Jim Collins was a great book, but some companies didn't end up so great in the end. But he did have some lovely metaphor in the book, which was, can you get the right people on the bus, and then can you get the right people on the right seats in the bus, and get the right person driving the bus? And I'm just curious about how similar that is to what Jim Collins was talking about, because I think he was more thinking more about the skill set, but are you talking more about almost like the way people behave and maybe the mindset? What do you mean by surrounding yourself by good people?
So there's a great little diagram, isn't there, 2x2 by the old CEO of GE, Jack Welch. It's skills and it's culture. And he says, you know, what is more important when you're recruiting? What's more important? And 90% of people would say it's skills. And I see it even on LinkedIn now. I was reading an article yesterday about how to write a resume, and it's like, no, it's all about skills and experience. That's all you've got to worry about. And for me, that's missing the most important element, because they're kind of forgetting that we're human beings. And if you hire someone for the right skills, but they're not a good cultural fit for you, changing their attitude and their principles and their culture is impossible. It's impossible. Those things are ingrained, like, since we were born. But finding someone with the right cultural fit for your company and for you, and then teaching them the skills that you need, that's so much easier. They'll be more keen to learn the skills because they enjoy that the journey that they're on. So I like the analogy about the bus, getting the right people on the bus, getting them in the right seats. But are you really, 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 really clear where your bus is going? Because if you've picked up people who don't want to go where you're going, it doesn't matter whether they're in the right seats or not.
Yeah.
And of course, there's different types of buses, right? You know, there's like party bus and there's like calm bus and there's all sorts of different buses. And this is kind of what I was hinting at earlier, is if you as a person and an organization can be really upfront and authentic and genuine about what sort of bus you're driving, then when you stop at the bus stop, only the people you get you will come on.
I really like that one. And that brings me on to your company coefficient, and I believe you've got a model, I'm not sure what to call it, Conmonergy. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I will. And just for the people on YouTube as well, I just pull it up because it's a visual model. So my background's spent a lot of time in architecture, so I'm quite a visual person. The Monergy flow is so cool because money goes where energy flows, and is subtitled How to Make More Money, Surround Yourself with People You Love, and Make the World a Better Place. And I think those are the three reasons that we're in business, aren't we? So if you're running a business, you absolutely want to make money. I don't think it's a dirty word. I don't think it's everything. It's not like all about making money, but you've got to make some money. It allows you to do two amazing things. It allows you to pay your staff. And when you pay a member of staff, you are usually contributing to a family. But it also allows you to pay taxes. And paying taxes goes towards creating the environment for us all to live in. It educates us. It looks after us when we're sick and when we're old. And it takes care of people who can't take care of themselves. So really, really important. But of course, money doesn't just turn up, does it? You have to sell something to somebody to make money. We used to think of it as products or services. I think these days, really all we're ever selling and buying are experiences. If you think about even some of the products that we're using, so we both bought a product, we're calling a computer, but it's allowing us to have this amazing experience of talking to each other right now. Some of the products we own, we're actually inside, like our clothes, we live inside them. So it's a real experience. To let people know that you've got something to sell, you have to do some marketing, right? You've got to tell them. And most people would say, you stand on the street and you say, "Hi, I'm John. This is what I've got to sell. This is the price. Who wants to buy it?" For me, that's not a great way of doing it. I think you should stand on the street and say, "Hi, here I am." You know, people buy from people. People buy why you do things, to quote Simon Sinek, not what you sell. So I try to be very careful about who I am, the way that's portrayed. And try to do it genuinely and authentically, because you just can't keep up the lie. You just can't keep it up. And the best businesses realize how important, you know, being clear about who they are is, and this is why they have brands. And a brand is just the personality of the business. But of course, it's not really the personality of the business, because the business doesn't really exist like humans does, and it can't have its own personality. But it's the humans at the start of the chain of events that has the personality, that informs the brand, that goes towards informing the marketing, so it's clear when you stand up on the street or you're on your website or when you're meeting people, it's clear who you are. And then you will attract the right type of people to you. Those people become clients, customers, they become ambassadors for you, and you can sell more stuff to more people who like you. And of course, then I think you should take your money and reinvest it back into your humans, because you know, they're at the start of the chain of events. So you have to nurture them. You have to provide meaningful connections for them. And I don't just mean human connections. You and me talking now is great, but what about a connection to a purpose or a secure future? That's key, or meaningful work. And of course, you know, taken straight out of Alan Mulally's playbook here, love. You've got to love them up. Yeah. And as human beings, love plays a huge part in our lives. We love to feel loved, obviously, but we love to give love as well. And then guess what? You have even better humans, clearer marketing, clearer brand, better marketing, sell even more stuff to even more people, and spiral up you go. And of course, the added benefit of a model like this is if you work for an organization like this, you are much more likely to be happy. Happy humans go home to their families every day, create happy families, and happy families become the happy communities where you and I live.
And happy employees serve happy customers, don't they? So Richard Branson thinks. So
yeah, and that's pretty cool. And the happy customers live in the communities, and you know, they're all interconnected.
Yeah. So if I do just do an audio description of your model, I see purpose, for example, and then I'll ask you to explain all these for us soon. And then I see people leading to strategy, implementation, and outcomes. And then I also see HBMS, and a pound or a dollar or a euro sign at the end, and then happy humans, happy families, happy communities. And then there's a kind of an interesting formula. It looks like almost like a formula, NC3 heart. Can you take us through all of this, John?
Yeah, so H is humans. So if you've got a clear purpose, then you can get the right people on the bus, the right humans on the bus. And if you've got your purpose stated all over the outside of your bus, then the right humans will climb on board. B stands for brand. The humans inform the brand. That then informs the M of marketing. Excellent marketing allows you to sell more stuff to more humans, and that's how you make your money. Then the reinvestment of that money back into the start of the chain of events, which are your humans, is N for nurture, C3 for those connections that I spoke about, you know, purpose, secure future, meaningful work. I mean, there are some others as well that actually are important. Connection to family, connection to a peaceful past, and the ability to forgive and all that sort of stuff. The heart is love, and that's how it spirals around.
So, John, I think I heard from you before this interview that you've got something to do with measurement. Is it of people? Is it of the environment? Is there something that you come up with that is kind of supporting this Monergy flow?
Yeah, this Monergy flow really forms the basis and the foundation for the company that I now run called Coefficient. So if we take that Monergy flow, it's also a nice echo for really how businesses operate. So every single business on the planet solves a human problem. So at some point, somebody observed the universe, observed the world, and thought, there's a problem there and I can fix it. And then they collected a group of humans around them to help them solve that problem. And what they do is then they've built strategy and structure and processes and whatnot. But at the end, they've solved the problem for another bunch of humans. There's a definite flow of chain of events there. The way that they measure their success is by measuring the byproduct, which is money. And now in the businesses that I've run, I always thought that was a little bit odd. I mean, I'm not saying don't measure your money. I think that's obviously quite an important thing you've got to measure. But it's once you've measured your money, it's over. Like, all the work you've done is done. What would be better is actually to measure earlier on in the chain of events. And earlier on in that chain of events are the humans. So Coefficient is a platform which allows you to measure the performance of your business, but from the perspective of the humans inside it. And lots of positives come out of that. It gives your employees a voice. It allows you very clearly and quickly with graphs and numbers to see where you're performing well, where you're not performing well, how different departments and demographic groups feeling about the company as well. And we touch on mental health. That's a huge part now, isn't it? So many people are unfortunately suffering with their mental health, not always necessarily due to work. There are many other things that can affect it, but the moment you step through the office door and go to work, it does become an issue for your company. So it really takes that Monergy flow idea and turns it into something that can be really useful for companies.
And does psychological safety come into this, John, or what kind of things you can say?
Absolutely. So one of the very first things that we did is we thought, well, if we're going to measure business performance, we better discover what things we should be measuring. And so we spent a large amount of time researching the latest business thinking out there. So we looked at the corporate governance codes and, you know, the IOD and Harvard and all those places. And we analyzed what they were talking about. We noticed that they were disproportionately talking about 19 elements, categories, if you want to call them that. So we touch on things like accountability, a sense of belonging, emotional safety, risk, strategy, leadership, ethical conduct. So there's a whole a broad spectrum of things that we touch on.
But the leadership one caught my attention there as well, and accountability. Within leadership, what kind of things were you looking for, John?
So I can't remember all of the statements off the top of my head, but it's things like ethics. Do you, as a member of staff, think that your leaders put the company first? Do you feel supported by your leaders?
Oh, so that's interesting. So it's the employees would get surveyed, if you like, what way they think the top leadership is behaving.
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously lots and lots of employee engagement surveys out there. Coefficient does it slightly differently to others, I think. So first of all, we focus on the performance of the business from the perspective of the staff. So it's not asking questions of how the world is affecting the staff. It's asking the staff their opinion of the business. And then we always work with business coaches or consultants. And we've got an amazing network, you know, across the UK and America of hundreds of coaches who work with us and our clients, or sometimes their clients too, to actually be the human element between the data and the organization. Because as you know, there are a million different businesses with a million different ways of doing business, with different cultures, different leaders, and there are many, many right ways to run a business. And so if we can use our data, feed it through a human being who knows that business really well, then they can tailor the actions to suit that organization, and we find that to be quite successful.
Okay. And psychological safety then? Do you call it psychological safety or do you call it something else, John?
We call it emotional safety, I think, but we did have months and months debating what terminology we should use, because they're quite close. In fact, I think you and I have had this debate as well, actually. So we measure things like, you know, do you feel physically safe at work? Do you feel emotionally safe at work? Do you feel supported? Are there systems in place? If you feel stressed, you can go to someone, say, look, I need some help. Do you feel appreciated? You know, are people patting you on the back and saying good job? So those are the types of things that we touch on.
I interviewed a chap called Matt Selby a few months ago. I really enjoyed the interview with him. His topic was customer feedback, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was saying to Matt, I said, Matt, you know, you go into these restaurants sometimes and you fill out the feedback form, but like, I don't know when they're going to see it or how quickly they're going to respond and all that. And he said one of the biggest problems that he encountered was that companies weren't actually acting on the feedback, the customer feedback. So I'm curious, like, Modergy Flow probably has some measurement report or something that it produces at the end, and you know, here you give it to the company, whatever. And then, of course, you know, how the company reacts to that is the interesting part. I mean, I've heard of some toxic examples where employees were brought into their manager's office for something they said in an anonymous survey. Do you know what I mean? So there's people are nervous now about what to say. So this is your bread and butter. So I'm sure you come across this all the time. But what are you seeing out there, John? Like in terms of when these reports are produced, and we've got a lovely picture now. We can see what's happening. At least we think we know what's happening. What happens next usually?
So a couple of things. So first of all, we're very aware of that coefficient. So we don't collect names or email addresses. Our data just is literally a bunch of numbers. We don't allow you to drill down below a certain number on the dashboard. Sometimes employees email me to say, I've done the survey, can you confirm that you've received my results? And I can't. It's not that I don't want to, it's just that I literally can't. I can say, well, some survey results have come in, but I can't say it's yours. So having that 100% anonymity is vital. Some firms use it as a tick box exercise. You know, we can keep our regulators happy because we're conducting a staff survey. For me, I like to see companies share the information with all their employees. Working with a coach, a middleman, or a consultant really alleviates that problem quite a lot, because there's somebody that's, you know, accountable and actually says, well, you get on with the day job of running the business. I will worry about the improvement plan going forwards using this data. But yeah, the worst thing you can do, isn't it, as a business, is to ask your staff an opinion and then don't listen to them. It's
quite tricky
and demoralizing.
Yeah, it is really tricky. And also, even it's good what you're doing. I like what you're doing there. Like, you don't allow drill down, because I've had experiences where the client would ask me to provide the data so they can put into Power BI. That's the last thing I want to do, because I don't want people getting compared and stuff like that. I want it to be pretty much anonymized. Just see a pattern. It means that the data is less actionable within a particular area because we don't know where the data came from. But I actually prefer that. Because it's real, rather than, okay, we're all being measured and compared. So it's compared to people, embarrassed people, the game is over, isn't it?
So it is a fine balance, because, of course, on the flip side of that, a number on its own means nothing. You need to have another number to compare it to. So we do offer internal comparisons between sort of different groups, but we're very clear. You can never pinpoint an individual. You might be able to, or you can notice that some departments are feeling differently about the organization than others. But it's not necessarily about their performance. That's another nuance to coefficient. It's not that area is performing poorly. It's that area or that department has a poorer perception of the business as a whole. Mm-hmm. Now, that's an interesting conversation. So what do they know that others don't know? And we're very clear as well that on staff survey or a staff engagement platform is the silver bullet. they have to work with others. So you have to then back it up with a plan. It needs the engagement of the actual client as well. Just like Marshall was saying, you know, if you can surround yourself with good customers, you'll have a great company. So we're pretty clear with our customers from day one. You know, we want to work with companies that care about the well-being of their staff and want to run a sustainable business plugged into the communities in which they sit. We actually say these things. And, you know, hopefully we filter out some of the companies that won't behave that way.
You remind me of something I saw myself when I was at a big bank in the UK a few years ago, the employee engagement. I actually saw it in a few other clients since in other industries, so it's not like typical to them, but the senior, very, very senior executives, like executive, almost like executive committee kind of leaders, right, would read out the engagement results, and, you know, they were awful, like they were just shocking. And I'm all for positivity, Marshall Goldsmith positivity, but there's a thing also called toxic positivity, where basically what they do is they dress up all the bad news and they find a tiny bit of the good news and put the bad news in between the good news kind of thing. I find that disappointing when that happens, because it means that they're not actually paying attention to that thing needs to be improved. Because what I want them to talk about is, yeah, that wasn't good and we need to act on that. And this is what we're planning to do about that, rather than saying, we had a little wrinkle there, but everything else is good, you know? So we're as good as our competition, who are also crap, by the way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. So in our results, we continually see that, well, it's unfair to say continually, but often we see leadership, managers, directors scoring very, very highly and staff members being nowhere near that. So there's definitely a mismatch somewhere. So that's quite revealing. We see that a lot.
What I like about your system is that this is something that I support as well, that basically it's nice for people to be assessed themselves, but I almost prefer, you know, what do other people think of how you're getting on as an executive? So how are you showing up? Mm-hmm. What do your employees think and how you're showing up? I remember a few years ago, I was at this company, right? And I did some measurement over a 9-month period, you see. And one of the questions was, I had numbers and I had qualitative, so I had interviews as well, John, and I had, you know, numbers as well. And so it balanced them up kind of thing. And I said, how confident are you that the executives know what the problems are that you're facing every day, you know, to do your delivery and so on? And 70% of them said, yeah, we're confident, we're good, you know? And then I asked them, how confident are you that the executives are doing anything about it? And it was the same. It was like 70%. I was like, oh, this is like amazing. Because the way executives are going around, they're saying that they're at these things in Scrum. They've got these things called sprint reviews where you look at the latest thing and you collaborate on what to do next and all that kind of stuff. But I did get a bit of a smell off it that there was applause and there was like, well done, everybody. You did a great job. You know, fantastic. I was kind of getting a bad smell. So I kept measuring. And at the end of the 9-month period, John, 75% of people believed that the executives knew what the problems were, and 20% of people believed that the executives were doing anything about it. So within 9 months of the change starting. So this behavior of just turning up and saying, well done, everybody, pretty much the employees saw through that within 9 months. It was a pattern, very strong pattern all the way down. Have you seen situations like that as well?
Well, not exactly like that, although I certainly believe it to be true. One of the things that we see a lot is, and because of the way that our system is designed, all of these categories are interrelated and interconnected, as of course they would be. Mm-hmm. Now, I would be interested, is that situation that you just spoke about, is that actually a communication issue? Mm-hmm. That the executives are not being open, honest, transparent, and clear about what's going on with the staff. Because if they're not, then the staff immediately think the worst. And, you know, I like to think, and maybe I'm naive, but I don't care. I want to stay naive, that most people are trying to do a good job. Okay, and it's we live in this world of, we need a hero and an enemy. We need Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader and black and white and Republican and Democrat. But actually, most people are trying to do a good job. And there's pressures all through a company. And, you know, if we were just a little bit more open and communicated and talked more and didn't get so upset when each other make a mistake. And we're human beings, so we make mistakes. We can be vulnerable. You know, even our leaders make mistakes. and are vulnerable. And I've been an employee, I've been an apprentice, I've been the CEO of companies. And, you know, when you get to the top, it doesn't mean immediately that you're invincible. You're shitting yourself half the time. The buck stops with you. So it's interesting when you start unpeeling it.
Yeah, it's a good point, actually. In that particular case, unfortunately, I saw myself, there were two massive problems that were 7 years old that were escalated, and then they were told you were empowered to fix it when they weren't empowered, you know. So it was a bit of talking on both sides of the mouth kind of problem. But yeah, I'm sure they were all trying to do their best, but the system was not set up in a way where they were going to work together and fix things, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So there's another interesting stat. You'll know this because it's world famous, but it's the Gallup rate of engagement at work. I mean, it's 79% or something at the moment. That's huge. It actually means that like 4 out of every 5 employees are turning up to work just for a salary, not to do something they believe in. And you know, I find that incredible, because just imagine how much more productive your business could be or our country could be if we managed to get that down by 10% or 20%. It would be phenomenal. When you start reading, you know, some of the finer stats about disengaged employees, I think it's like, you know, for every disengaged employee, it costs about 34% of their salary just to employ them. I strongly believe, and I think Alan Mulally said it, so I'm just going to basically nick what he said, but the largest wealth creation opportunity we have is in engaged workforce. And I don't believe that's just for businesses. I think that's also for our communities as well. Because if you are more engaged at work, you are hopefully on a better bus going to a better place with more people that you respect and get on with and are talking well and communicating well. And that's better for the business, but it's also better for you when you leave work and go home to your family.
Thank you, John. So what would be your top tips for executive leaders out there in terms of how they can be inspired, how they can be inspiring so that we can have more engagement in the workplace where we don't have, you know, these statistics that you mentioned, that we have much better statistics? Any top tips
for me? Yeah. Well, what's worked for me is just to never forget that you live and learn, right? And I'm learning more now than I'd learned in my whole life. You know, I love reading books. I love talking to people like you. You're really interesting and you pick up these amazing nuggets. I go to a lot of talks. I watch a lot of stuff on YouTube and I get the opportunity to go face to face. I go to seminars and things. And you can always, always, always keep learning. And the more you learn, the more you know, the more you can piece together this amazing tapestry of life and realize that business is not just about spreadsheets and numbers. There's a whole lot going on. And think about just how complicated and at times emotionally mental we all are as human beings. They're like the primary driver for all our businesses out there. So converting that emotional energy into a spreadsheet for me doesn't work. I'm not saying forget about the spreadsheet. I'm saying that there's humans at the center of all these things.
Yeah.
There's massive balance. Yeah.
Yeah.
And find your own way to be inspiring and try to be as authentic as you can. My way of trying to be inspiring or feeling inspired is going to be different to yours, John. And it's going to be different to the people listening. And that's cool. That's absolutely fine. That's what makes life so wonderful and intriguing and exciting. But I think if more of us can be authentic and genuine about who we are and what turns us off and what turns us on, then it's going to be better for everyone.
Thank you, John. What's next for you for Coefficient and for Monergy?
Well, Monergy slowly evolves. I'm halfway through writing a book, and I've exaggerated the halfway through bit there, but I've wanted to write a book about it for a long time. Coefficient is a young company, so we are all hard at it, building and growing, and that's really going to be my focus for the next few years.
John Hibbs, it's been a pleasure to have you on the Exit Agility podcast today. Thank you so much for coming.
It's been my pleasure, John. Thanks for having me.